Firstly, I would like to take this opportunity to welcome members. I hope all of us tried to have some time to rest, and we are refreshed.
There have been quite serious difficulties on the Soshan Guve campus. Our registration was suspended on Friday, and I was expecting registration to be reinstated on the Soshan Guve campus yesterday or today. And that was simply just so that they could have greater controlled access, because it was the view of members of the SRC and of management that some of the protests were of people who weren't legitimate students. The Soshan Guve campus I've covered, and so we're resuming registration today. Improving throughput. If I can move to just what we're doing to improve the throughput rate at universities. There's three interventions that we're using. One is the foundation program funding, teaching development funds, and then funds for improving physical teaching facilities. The foundation program funding is a mechanism by which, for selected students, universities can extend the standard curricula by 1 year. And what the foundation funds can be used to improve, to provide additional academic staff, new teaching equipment. So in between 2007 to last year's financial year, we allocated $403 million to foundation programs, which meant that 37,000 new undergraduate students who may have been underprepared but potentially able were assisted. Between 2010-11 to 2011-12, we're hoping to reach 48,000 with a $517 million allocation to universities. This is an allocation that universities have to apply for. I keep getting a duplicate, so I'm sorry about that. Now, the teaching development grant is a separate thing to the foundation grant. I've already explained that universities get an allocation which is based on the number of students they teach by agreement with the ministry. The teaching development fund, we are changing the way in which that's operated. Up until now, the teaching development fund has virtually been proportional to enrollment. But we're saying we want universities to focus their use of the teaching development fund on particular courses which are high risk for failure, so that they can focus on this specific project to improve throughput in what some people call killer courses. And so we are taking a portion of the teaching development grant in the next 2 years to make that available for institutions to use for initiatives for improving teaching and development. The third intervention is the earmarked funds for improving teaching facilities. Because improving throughput also depends on having proper facilities. In between 2007-08 to this financial year, a total of $3.5 billion in earmarked funds was allocated to universities for enhancing teaching services, and a further $3.2 million. I think that this comma is wrong. So $3.5 million and now $3.2 million has been allocated for 2010-2011-12. One of the things that's hidden there, but has been a big feature of protest, particularly at DUT, is the question of student housing. Universities are not evenly distributed across the country. That would be to be expected, but it does mean that there's large numbers of students who require student housing. And this is a crisis felt across many campuses where there is not enough student housing, and we have some work happening at the moment to support programs for maths and maths lit in particular. And the student services in the colleges are working on the issue of advising students in terms of proper placement. And then the whole issue of a culture of learning and teaching and monitoring students' attendance for improved retention. and just making sure that there's a pastoral, well, there's mechanisms for pastoral support in the colleges. So, Chairperson, I know that it's been a long presentation, but in terms of your letter of invitation, I think that we've been able to give you a work in progress because registration is still underway in terms of some of the challenges, some of the interventions, where we are with NSFAS, and work that's underway to improve throughput with an understanding that there's still a great deal more to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG, for the presentation. I think one needs to appreciate the input. For DG, there are quite some of the things that I have a bit of fundamental problems with specifically on the institution's intake, and again on the issue of support for students. I mean, the committee has engaged in this first last year on the issue of startup preparation for the intake of general. But part of the engagement and the input from the committee was that the challenge with NSFAS and funding for students is not only at the level of NSFAS functioning, but it's at the implementation level at these institutions. And what we were trying to say was cautioning NSFAS to say, shall we try and make sure that we have a situation where we put some mechanism in place so that come 2010 registration period, we do not have a problem. And unfortunately, as we're sitting here, we're still getting the part of the report that we got in terms of the capacity, in terms of consistency, implementation of the registration fees for students as part of support within institution. And that lack of standardization is a bit of a challenge, and that has been raised by the committee even from last year when we engaged NSFAS, even through their reports. So it's a bit of a challenge from one city because you obviously have number of students being excluded again this financial year or this academic year because of those inconsistencies. But secondly, DG, it's the issue of the criteria of intake in this institution. I mean, looking at the presentation, you're highlighting that institution would develop their own guidelines. And what I want to check is that, is there a standardization process to say these are the principles that guide you as you develop this? Because we'll continue to have students protesting in institutions raising that we are being excluded. I mean, I've had letters as a member of committee when somebody says that because I was an SRC member, I've been targeted, I've been excluded. You know, so that such things don't arise from students, that I'm being excluded because of my political activism within the institution. And if that is in place, can you just share with the committee? But the other thing that I think from my side would be dealing with the issue of fee increment in institutions, which at times becomes the point of protests again. We might have a lesser number of these protests now, but compared to other years. But that has continued to be a challenge. I mean, you have where families, they can afford to pay, but because of this number of every year rising, I think we actually shared with the minister last year as well to say various institutions actually targeted to raise their fees this year by 10 to 12% in terms of their increase. And we had requested that the minister looks into this matter quite seriously because if you look at the situation whereby you have financial recession, there are constraints in terms of economic and people are somehow, you know, can't afford, and you have institutions continue to raise the increments in terms of fees, doesn't that take us back in terms of those who can afford will end up in tertiary institutions and those who can't afford would end up being excluded? And again, looking at the capacity of NSFAS not being able to accommodate everybody. I mean, when we were getting the report as well, it was the issue of NSFAS having limited resources to be able to respond, the allocation going to institutions somehow, institutions because they want to broaden the allocation, the whole gap. Such things will continue to ensure that will continue to result in a situation whereby you have a number of students being excluded who actually deserve and qualify to be in institutions.
So those are the concerns from where I'm sitting, but I'm going to open as well for members of the committee just to make comments as well as questions so that when you respond, at least you try and level this. But I'll come back on the issue of the college sector. I just wanted to deal with this fundamental issue that I have, and then later we'll open, I'll come back to deal with this. I must get myself back from holiday and remember all the names. I'll start with Honorable Honorable Fufusa. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to remember all the names from holidays. It's Honorable Fufusa, Honorable Buinamo. Let's not forget that. Honorable Mange. And then Honorable Gina, you have your name, your hand up. And then Honorable Mbocha. Honorable Dudley will be the next one. No, I'm in that line of thank you, Chair, and thank you, DG, for always a clear presentation. Thank you for that. Yeah. And you must also know that you have our support. DG, mine is whether you use choreography, aesthetics, or response, but it's a question around responsiveness. Last year, HISA presented to us a report, and it made a lot of headlines. And one of those worrying factors was the readiness or lack of entrance to university in terms of numeracy, counting, writing, expressing themselves in English, and so on. And a lot of other things. So my issue, I don't know if it's for now or for reflection, DG, to say that there is a report, and not only that report, a lot of other reports, but that one, in my mind, it stands quite, it's key in my mind. Have we intentionally responded, or is there the departmental plans? Do they speak to the HISA report in particular? In a sense that I am responding to myself, I think that somewhere it is captured in terms of the foundation program and so on. I think that the academic support is also there, but I don't know, I don't want to take for granted, but I am asking whether HISA, the departmental plans, have factored in the HISA report. The second one for me is, again, the issue of responsiveness. In page 4, the DG is talking about enrollment to be matched to available resources, physical, human, and financial. I like that, and I'm sure the committee likes that too. But for me, it must also be matched to the needs of the economy. Because what are we providing for? What are all these things for? Are we responding to economy? In other words, if there is a skills audit, are we responding in our plans to the skills audit? And are we providing what the environment is waiting from us as the higher education sector? And in terms of throughputs, I'm interested to know, in the race breakdown, specifically in science and maths, in terms of increased enrollment, I can see that there is increased enrollment, but I am curious about the race breakdown in terms of that. And as far as the late release of matric results, has it had, what is the impact in the enrollment? What is the impact in NSFAS? What is the impact? Because there was a late release, so I'm just curious to understand what that has done. The last one for me is the projected college enrollment for 2010, and it being a provincial output. And again, the issue for me is responsiveness. Do these college, or are they responding to provincial needs? And not necessarily that is all, provincial and beyond. I'd like to understand that, whether there is local relevance in what we do, because up until we respond to felt and experienced needs, can we say that education is relevant? And also, I think that we need more about colleges, because there were colleges that were closed, and of course the minister is very sensitive to re-energizing that space of colleges, and I'm sure there's a lot of work that seeks to be done in terms of that. So even though we do have colleges, do they respond to what is the proportion of colleges and what they offer to the population itself? Like, for example, if you go to Giani, because we went to Giani, is that enough for Giani? Is the college providing local response to felt and experienced needs locally? And I'm sure we're waiting for the NSFAS report that the DG is saying will be released. And also we are curious, I'm sure, about the CETA and the integration of all these departments into one. And thanks, DG. Sorry, I was long.
Honorable Buinabu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, DG, we are quite aware that registration is resumed at Tshwane University of Technology, but the question is, what measures are in place to ensure that the protests this country has been experiencing over the past weeks is not going to resurface? Because if they are registering and there's nothing that has actually been put in place to make sure that now teaching and learning is going to resume undisturbed, then we're going to find ourselves running in circles. You see, DG, most of the students really go to universities for own reasons. Once they are on campus, some of them would want to begin to run the campus and not to study, to begin to tell the university administration staff what to do. And this is not their competence. Their competence is to learn. And I have realized that rules and regulations are put in place at universities and at any learning institution. But if you go to our universities, those rules and regulations are not actually being observed by students. Students would want to do as they please. The university, the University of Technology, for example, if you go there, you realize on campus there are people who have got nothing to do with the university, who are not students, but they live on campus. They reside on campus. And these are the people who cause commotions and incite the students to go on strikes. They sell drugs. We saw on TV, I think it's on this past weekend, big plants of marijuana planted at Tshwane University of Technology. And you ask yourself, if these drugs can be planted on university and be watered, what is the duty of the ground staff if they cannot see what's growing on the ground on which they work? And I think we need to tackle issues such as this so that we are sure that people who are seen on campus are people who are registered to study on campus and nobody else. I mean, if somebody enters the campus, the security is there at the gate to monitor this movement, and somebody goes in and doesn't come out for a week and they don't worry. They don't go and check what happened to this person. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minamo. Honorable Gina.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question will be around the presentation that DG, where she said the colleges can still apply for the allowance of having these native courses. If ever there are industries, we still need that. And I'm just checking around the confusion that might be caused in the colleges around that issue as to say, is the department still going to fund for those? Or we say if ever the industries still need the native courses, it should be fully funded by those industries. And the whole question around the issue of the lecturers and whatever, are we not causing somehow the confusion around our colleges on that issue of MCVs and NATED? studies. And also, DG, I think we you need to act to be a little bit quick on the issue of the provinces. Colleges still governed by the provinces, or are they solely on you as on the national level? Because really, there is a confusion and there is a frustration around the colleges, the FHE colleges, as to say when they go to the CFOs of the provinces, it's as if they've got nothing to do. I'm quoting it. I can cite examples from KZN where they feel that they're being frustrated, really, as to say they end up don't really know where do they fall exactly. Should they go straight to the national office, to your offices, or is there anything that the provinces still have to do with those? So really, your visit, I think your visit will be of great help. And also, even around the whole question of the results for last year, DG, I know there is a confusion in the FET colleges. There are so many results that are pending where students do not know their future. What fate is it? Because there is this confusion again. I think you'll know, you'll understand what it is that I'm talking about. Really, the students are suffering. They don't know where to go as it is now because there are so many results that are still pending. And can you please, in your office, can you make sure that those things are being clarified? Lastly, DG, when you talk of enrollment planning, where you need to increase the enrollment of SCAD subjects and critical skills, I don't know really what is your intake in this, as to say, what link do you really have with the basic education? Because, you know, when you look at the results for this year, you see how poor were they, especially on these SCAD subjects. As to say, I cannot expect you to sit there as higher education and wait for intake where there is nothing that is forthcoming. Really, I don't know how can we make sure that we link these two these two ministers to make sure that what is coming up, and I think you understand what is it you say. Because really, you cannot just sit there and wait for the enrollment for these cast subjects, whereas we know very well there is nothing coming forth from Metric. Looking at the results as how they were this year. Maybe I cannot get into that basically, but really, I think you should now and again, if you make sure that you increase enrollment, you also help the lecturers there at the higher level. But really, you need to go back and assist there so that you can get a good intake for your output to be good in the higher education sector. Thank you,
Chairman. Thanks, Honorable Chairman. Honorable Mayan.
Well, thank you, DG. I think the briefing was very comprehensive, and you touched quite a lot of aspects relating to higher education. But I just wanted to ask one or two questions. One related to graduation rates. You talked about that too, but we know that graduation rates are a function of underprepared students that come into universities, not enough capacity on the part of the universities in terms of lecture rooms, dormitories that you also referred to. They all have an impact on this. Teaching staff, the numbers, I understand that some of the universities do not have enough lecturers, and they have serious problems of overwork. They are overstretched. They have got tight budgets, and yet they are supposed to improve these graduation rates, give the country the skills it needs, and so on. You refer to some interventions that the department is engaged in, especially from page 35 or slide 35 to 38. I know this is ongoing, but it started in 2007, according to this presentation. What sense do you have? Are we getting somewhere in terms of this increasing capacity? I know you can't do much about the underpreparedness of students except to offer remedial or foundation studies. Secondly, the another message just you didn't raise. There is a South African Research Chair Initiative that's initiated by DST and working through the National Research Foundation, of course, meant to improve research capacity and output in our universities, give more resources, but also give some additionality, bringing in some academic staff from elsewhere, mainly from abroad and so on. And by this year, if all goes well, there ought to be 210 such researchers. Are we there? We have 110. Chair, did you say we shouldn't talk about colleges?
I was saying I would come back to the college specifically.
Okay.
I think it needs more attention
okay.
in terms of the debate. So
I'll come back when you come.
Okay. Honorable Mpontan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, DJ. I would have loved to go page by page or slide by slide because we have raised quite a number of issues which some of them need some clarity. For instance, on page 17, or just before I go to registration, there is this, the Central Application Center. How well is that center working? Because I've met quite a number of students who claim to have applied through that center, but universities, or they did not get any response at all. If they did, the letters would just say, pending, 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 pending. Come registration time, they're frustrated. They go from one institution to another, they're told, pending. I don't know how well that center is working. If we could get some explanation, LTT. And on page 17, there is that task team, which is monitoring registration. I would have loved to get a report or something, what sort of challenges they meet or responses when they move from one institution to another. And also on page 18, I'm not going through all the pages, I'm just giving examples now. On page 18, you are reporting class teaching that the minister has visited some of these institutions. He has met for research with the Union of Students. But there's a problem there. I know after the minister's visit in some institutions, tensions have flared up among the students. Because, you know what happens? This Union of Students does not represent all student movements at particular institutions. Then, after the visit, you find that tensions flared up. For instance, the minister was going to visit University of Zululand on a Tuesday. Now, just a day before the minister's visit, some students wanted to address some students, and they were arrested. In fact, they spent the whole week, just imagine the whole week, at the cells, denied bail as if they had committed. And such things that are going on in some institutions are really worrying, you know. And the provincial departments monitoring registration, how do they do it? Provincial, because I would understand that universities autonomous institutions or colleges, is it colleges? Oh, okay. I thought it was. But my last question, still on registration. Did you say rightly that you did send a letter to all institutions about the upfront payment, but we're saying some universities are not responding to your letter. And we know for sure that there are some students, as we're speaking, who cannot register, though they are recipients, they've been recipients of NSFAS. And institutions are not responding to your letter. Is it because of this autonomy again, and how do you balance the two? I'll come back to some of the questions in the other slides, but let me rest my case for now. Thank you.
Honorable, I'll take the last one. Thank you. I know it's a long one. I think would allow you, some of the things are comments, quite honestly. Let's allow Honorable Dudley to speak.
Thanks, Didi. When you were speaking about the effect of funding on student enrollment, you mentioned interesting and innovative developments, and obviously this may not be the time, but it would be interesting to hear that expanded on. And then you mentioned about diverting funds to the colleges, or that from the CETAs, and sort of how beneficial or how feasible is that arrangement or something around there. The crisis point on campuses being related to student housing, obviously that sounds like a biggie and something that needs to be addressed urgently. And I'm just wondering, was there something in place already happening, or what's going on there? I know this has been touched on, but the protests being the not legitimate students being on campus, and what's making these campuses vulnerable to that kind of thing, and has there been some kind of research done on that? And then, just lastly, with the matric results, how they're affecting your situation at the moment. Thanks.
I think would give you an opportunity. I think the majority of some of the things are comments, would like to hear your views, but others it's mainly questions that would get a response. But I think the two things that I think as committee we need to provide direction on, and issues of saying that in institution, Honorable Mwinamu, I mean in institution where there are criminal activities, that should be left as pure criminal activities, that the institution must just bring police in and deal with it. It's the management of this institution that must be held accountable. And that can be confused with the need and the importance of student representatives in campuses. I felt that at some point you sounded like you are discouraging student representatives and student activism. So I thought that that's from where I'm sitting as chair, it came across that way, and which could be a bit problematic because they play an important role if they sit in part of the management and discuss issues to manage and agree upon these things and report back to their students, and therefore assist in the functioning, effective functioning of institutions. And perhaps maybe I'm speaking from experience of having been a student leader myself and how they have played a role and been able to assist. And then, again, as well, what I thought that should be assisting, maybe we should have a thorough discussion on maybe perhaps later, just to ask Titi to come with a NSFAS review report for us to engage, even because as part of the stakeholders, because we are critical stakeholders sitting here as Parliament, and that our role shouldn't be reduced there. So I would appreciate that the sooner you are able to come through with that report together with NSFAS, come through so that we can engage in it, because we've made a number of views as a committee, and we'd like to see them coming through, especially being coming from constituencies and getting these issues. But again, the issue of that progress report, I think Honorable Dudley and Honorable Vukusa raised the issue of the CETAs. Perhaps maybe just as Sarah, we might not be able to deal with it now intensively. But a discussion where it gives us a clear indication where we are, what are the issues, and how you look, because from one sitting, I sense that there's already a look into the future, how the CETAs should be responding. I mean, that transfer of funds and as well utilizing the colleges sector. That, to me, gives me a sense of already looking forward. So it would be important for us as the committee to get that sense from the department so that when we move in the same length and take the step forward. But let me just give you an opportunity to respond, and then we'll open just another round for members to round up some of the issues.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the members of the committee for the engagement. I really value the opportunity to engage because I think, Chairperson, the more that we have a common understanding, the better the work we'll be able to do together. So thank you for the questions. Chairperson, the other thing is that I might just take the liberty of sometimes signaling, as you have, where I think that there's a particular issue the committee, I would value the committee pursuing. And so I might also just indicate that. Just firstly, you're correct. The NSFAS report is going to be made public, but the role of the portfolio committee is critical. I think that the portfolio committee is going to be assisting the minister in terms of his responsibilities for policy formulation by playing a leading role. We won't be doing anything other than requesting public comment, but I would imagine that you would be leading that. So we will talk about how to work on that. Right. The first question that I want to address is an interesting one. And that is the question of the frustration that the committee feels about the lack of thorough preparation and the crisis that one sees in institutions at the beginning of every year. And our assessment is that where families of young learners manage application processes timelessly, the crisis is much reduced. And there's a great deal of work we need to do to explain, particularly to first-generation university students, that it's not the same as schools used to be, where you arrive in January and say, I want to be registered. In fact, applications close in September. And that is not, I think, generally understood, particularly in first-generation families. So the universities that are buckling with pressure at the moment, it will be particularly where you have what we call the drop-in students. Now, I would never want to say you go away. And universities are now coping with large numbers of students who haven't previously applied, haven't applied for any space. If families apply timelessly, they've applied by September, they've applied for any space by September, their matric results are processed, and their students know where they stand. But we have large numbers of people coming in late, and we call those drop-ins. So it's a question of public education. It's a question of better advice at school level, greater encouragement. You know, some of the very well-functioning schools automatically help the students to apply for university. So it's a career guidance issue. It's a public information issue. But it does mean that there's huge pressure at this time of the year. And I want to link that to your question about the late results. I think that there's a particular pressure on registration this year, and it comes from two quarters. Number one is that we had to really work very closely with Umalusi and Basic Education to try and get the electronic results to universities as quick as possible, even before the release. And we also have many universities starting slightly earlier to accommodate the longer July break because of the World Cup. So the every day counts at this time of the year, and it's been contracted, and I think we have extra pressure. A later knowledge of the results and an earlier registration. The second point is about NSFAS and the work that the committee did last year to talk to NSFAS about having mechanisms in place. Now, the issue is that the NSFAS allocates money to the institutions, and then the institutions distribute that money, and that's the blockage. The outgoing CEO of, acting CEO of NSFAS has written a briefing note for the newly appointed CEO. And I noticed in that report that he's arguing that we need to think very seriously about not creating NSFAS regional centers, but having NSFAS funded staff in each institution so that we can manage it quite tightly. So when mechanisms are not in place, that will be linked to the different levels of operational managerial efficiency at different universities. And some universities are coping much better than others. Some are running a very tight ship and some are struggling. The next question that I want to address and comment is the question of exclusions. Now, I have indicated that the minister met with Higher Education South Africa's executive in the second week of January. And the question of exclusions was discussed there, and I think that I was looking through my notes to see if I can get the exact wording, but I'll pull it from my head, is that the universities were absolutely explicit that where a student is both academically deserving and financially needy, they will by all means do everything they can to assist that student to get through. Sometimes that means that they'll allow registration even if previous year's fees haven't been paid, but it means an accumulated debt. Now, universities are uneven, and we're working with HESA to make sure that HESA provides leadership to the sector itself by generating models of best practice and benchmarking against practice and sharing best practice. But the principle that the exco of HESA committed themselves to was that if you have an academically deserving student, they will by all means seek to make sure that there's not a financial exclusion. Now, chairperson, the inference of that is that where students fail, there's less inclination to go the extra mile in terms of financial support. And the message to young people is that this is an opportunity that you must grasp with both hands and not conduct yourself as you've described, because there's very few second chances in a system that's so competitive. And that's the message that we need to be taking out. In terms of financial exclusions, the only thing that we can comfort ourselves with is that the NSFAS amount of money is directed towards the poorest of the poor. So the poorest families qualify, get the financial support. I would like to see that amount of money being more and the definition of relative poverty being more inclusive. But at least we know that to the extent that the national fiscus can allow, the poorest students are assisted on the basis of the means test. It's not enough. We would like more. We'll continue to work towards that. Chairperson, you raised a very important question, and I do think that this is something that the sector must be engaged on. You see, and it links, in fact, to your first question. Your first question, and I'm going to link it to the chairperson's question, was you reminded us of the work of HESA, of Nan Yeld in particular, in terms of the benchmark testing. Now, the benchmark testing, the results of which were presented to the committee last year, unfortunately, I think Nan Yeld herself came second, and she may not have had the full attention, and it may still be worth talking to her about progress, although she's on sabbatical this year, is the benchmark test are a diagnostic instrument to help universities understand the differing levels of performance within their first year cohort so that they can direct their teaching and learning interventions towards a group of students. If that benchmark test indicates that the students are underprepared, the challenge is for universities to have the teaching and learning interventions that will assist. But what's interesting is your question about how do we assess academic merit. And the fundamental approach in many countries, most countries and certainly here, is that you take the result of the National Senior Certificate and you say this will give us an indication of which students are likely to succeed. It's not a prize. It's not because you've done well, you can now go to university. It's because universities have the challenge of identifying which students are likely to succeed, so that you don't have wasted resources and wasted human endeavor. The only indicator of that at the moment is the National Senior Certificate. Now, the question then is, does the National Senior Certificate identify evenly across society all of the children who are capable of succeeding, or is it a marker of education experience and the inequalities of that educational experience? That's a challenge to the sector, and the sector needs to respond to that. There have been models in previous years, and we would have to, in fact, I would encourage the committee to invite HESA to make a presentation on what interventions there are across different universities to identify highly talented students from schools which we consider to be disadvantaged. For example, the minister in his discussion with HESA put on the table the principle that students from quintile one students who've done well in matric need to be financially supported because they represent the most disadvantaged families in our communities. And there's a, you need to in fact ask us, give us information on how many students from quintile one schools got university entrance senior certificate, and we'll see that it's disproportionate. So there do need to be interventions to better judge academic merit and academic potential, and this is a university wide project, I would say. The question of particular students being targeted, one of the functions of the task team, and I'm responding to two questions here, if any students feel that they've been unfairly treated, those are precisely the cases in which we would ask institutions for a report. So if an SRC member feels that they've been targeted on the basis of their political activities rather than they didn't do the work because they were so busy on the SRC, we would certainly want to hear and ask the institution for a report, and the daily work of the task team will be responding to such cases. I need now to just look at the question of the fee increments. We have done a study of the fee increments across the universities, and there is a we will be appointing a review committee this year to review university funding, in fact, university and college funding, because it's difficult to really get an assessment on the basis of a single year increase relative to CPIX. Because there's always negotiations within the universities, and you need to be able to get a sense of the university fee increases in an institution over a period of time. Council will determine the fee increase. That's the nature of the institution's autonomy. And councils will determine the fee increase based on the budget, which will include as its income the subsidy received from government and student fees. And it must balance the budget on the basis of that income. Sometimes a third stream income donations, but basically it's a subsidy and the student fees. And what has been shown by the sector over the last 10 years or so is that the subsidy is declining relative to student fees. So student fees are representing a greater percentage of the income to university and subsidy representing less. So that interrogation of how the balance sheet is prepared for university happens at council level, at which students are represented. Every institution needs to, every year with a new student leadership, work through budget issues so there's an understanding. Linda, you're absolutely right about the need to link the planning mechanisms of the input and output of colleges and universities relative to skills needs. That's one of the very exciting things, I think, about the creation of this new department, because we're responsible under the leadership of the Deputy President for the Human Resource Development Strategy with the skills legislation, the National Skills Development Strategy, as well as for those agencies which distribute the skills levy, which we will align with skills planning using public institutions as the major instruments of delivery. The question of ill discipline on student campuses, universities belong to communities, and that is represented in the way that councils are constituted to reflect communities, and we have to, from our communities, support universities where there is student ill discipline to make sure that these are places of learning and teaching. The department can do its role, but when I come across a member of parliament who knows an institution so well, I am hoping that such a member will also play a leadership role working with us to make sure that issues such as growing of dacha on the grounds of a campus are dealt with. The college question I'm going to hold for next time, but I noted the questions, and they're very interesting questions, and we'll come back to that. Okay. Member Mangen has asked some very interesting questions. In terms of graduation rates, he's correct that it's a function of underpreparedness and weakness within institutions. And the question is, do we have enough staff? Now, you see, that links right back to my opening comments about the responsibilities of institutions and their councils and the department for planning. Institutions that are planning carefully are making sure that their admission is linked to capacity. Institutions that are not well managed are having huge numbers of drop-in students and are overwhelmed and are admitting beyond the capacity, put themselves at risk because then they have a larger student enrollment even than the subsidy allows, which means that the conditions are poor, which means that the graduation rates are poor. So we need stronger leadership in our universities to make sure that issues of poor graduation results as a function of poor resources, high student staff ratios, overcrowded venues are managed. That I know is a challenge because there are fewer places available in universities than, to meet the needs of the many young people who wish to attend higher education institutions. And that is why in the government's medium term policy, there's a commitment to increasing the current levels of enrollment from 17% to 20%. That will need to be accompanied by funding so that we can increase the capacity in a planned way. The South African Research Chairs Initiative, it's a very exciting initiative that was led by your previous ministry. It's still in place, and I'm going to find out where we are in terms of the 2010 target and have a conversation with that on you. The last set of questions, I hope I haven't left anything. Oh, Cheryl's as well. Sorry, Member Bagmore's as well. I want to address the question of University of Zululand. This is, I think, what needs to be understood, is that one of the reasons that University of Zululand has been so unstable is because they weren't able to complete the SRC elections because of the contestation between student groups. And, you know, our university should be places where people are beginning to learn democratic practice and beginning to learn how to respect and lead each other. If we can't conclude an SRC election because of contestation, it doesn't augur well for our country and for the region. So, to my knowledge, UZ still doesn't have a democratically elected SRC, which means who does management pursue and who leads the students, which means again, contestation who's got the, who can mobilize the biggest crowd, whereas in fact what we need to learn on campuses is that students elect a particular grouping, wins the election, and then they represent all, fairly and without favor, as is the same with government. So I think that there's several members here who I know are familiar with the University of Zululand, and we need to provide the leadership of adults to encourage students to understand that where we fail to resolve those tensions of democracy, we actually undermine institutions profoundly. So the perception that the South African Union of Students may be biased, I think, comes from the possibility that because there's no SRC, they're not participating in SOURS. The South African Union of Students coordinates SRCs, whatever the organizational base on which those SRCs stood. So it will be SRCs from all over the country, and it would never represent one grouping. But if the University of Zealand doesn't have an SRC, it's not directly represented, and we need to resolve those issues there. Member Doug Moore, yeah, what makes, it's a very interesting question, what makes some campuses more vulnerable to students that are not legitimate students being on campus? And I would say that fundamentally it's to do with effective management, and effective management that has the support of the student population, which means that you have functioning student representative structures and good relationships with the community. If a particular campus, for example, Tsashungure, as members described, has many people that are not students on that campus, I would argue that that campus principal, together with the vice chancellor of the university, needs to be working much more closely with the community to reach an agreement on how closely that campus needs to be have access control. But it undermines teaching and learning profoundly, and I'm concerned about that, so there's a follow-up. There's a last question. Oh, you asked how the matric results affect us. Well, it is interesting because as soon as the results are ready, I was very anxious to get them because these are the ways in which they affect us. There's the question of the pass rate. And the pass rate, as members will be aware, is expressed in three categories these days, whether you qualify for admission to a bachelor's degree, qualify for admission for a certificate, qualify admission for a diploma. And if I'm frank, my first anxiety as I look at that is to see if there's many more students that have qualified for admission to degree, because then I know that if, for example, as was the unfortunate error, there's a huge increase, and I know our institutions are going to be under huge pressure. So the number of students who qualify for admission to a degree diploma will determine the number of applicants who apply and the pressure. I hope that makes sense. But there's a second way in which they affect us. That is the quality of the passes themselves. And it may be, I think this committee's got a great deal of work to do, but it may be that you want to study the categories of passes across, because students can qualify for admission to a degree, and they may have a level of performance across the subjects, which is not of a sufficiently high standard to really sustain a good base for higher education, which then puts greater burdens on the institutions in terms of teaching and learning. And universities are research institutions, but they also are institutions of teaching. And it would mean that academics have then the serious responsibility of making sure that their teaching practices are rigorous. In fact, that they research their teaching practices in order to do better. Student housing, we can give a report on that, but there's already work underway in terms of beginning to get a sector understanding of the student housing challenges. The question of innovative funding, as I indicated in the service level agreements for the CETAs for this year, we've already requested them to report in their, well, to write into their service level agreements and chairperson. We're hoping that this committee will invite the CETAs to come and, well, invite the department and the CETAs to come and make presentations on their service level agreements. And we were also hoping that you would work in partnership with the appropriate sectoral portfolio committees. So, for example, the Agri-CETA to work with Agriculture, Mer-CETA, for example, to work with DTI. We have asked them to write in specifically where they're going to be forming partnerships with universities, but in particular universities of technology and colleges. So, for example, the funding of some of the end courses, we would be expecting that to be funded through the CETAs from the skills levy and directed towards the colleges. Chairperson, I hope I covered everything briefly enough.
I'm just going to open
I asked a question and I didn't hear the DG answering it. Can I repeat it? My first question, it was just one question anyway. My question was, what has been done to address challenges that led to the abrasions of these said institutions so that they don't resurface? And may I also ask whether the NSFAS has now been restructured in such a way that it covers all the fees per a beneficiary, because in the past it was not the case. Thank you.
Shall we just take just a few, because it's additional to what he was asking. There were a couple of hands, and then so that we close on the input teaching, and then I would just summarize in terms of the way forward. Let me just note hands. Lisa, I'm just going to ask you to just make quick comments or questions that we close. Honorable Mangane, you wanted to speak. Honorable Fukusa. Oh, those are the two ones, and then I'll come just.
It's on colleges. The slide has no number, but it's the heading is proposed expansion of student enrollment in the public FET colleges. I think this is really a wonderful endeavor. I see in 3 years between 2007 and 2009, there was a fivefold increase in the enrollment at the colleges. I wouldn't expect you to have a 2010 enrollment figures yet, but if the trend holds, then probably that figure that is there should be reached, and therefore the others will follow. But what I wanted to check was what amount of work is being done to improve the prestige of the colleges so that they aren't a fallback position. People kids will be in grade 11 and 12 saying, I am finishing grade 12 next year in order to go to a college, an FET college, and do this. Presently, that is not the position. Is there a system-wide work or campaign that is being done to improve their prestige and so that they become mainstream and places of choice for kids? Also, how are they being connected to the world of work, companies in particular, and so on, so that they have a direct link with the colleges, and perhaps even offer support, financial and otherwise. And in the majority of cases, those who go to these colleges are much more functional and employable than people who go to universities. Incidentally, when I was deputy minister, I visited a college in Port Elizabeth of learners with difficulties in academic learning, and they were doing carpentry and motor mechanic and similar things. Employers were generally queuing to snap them up as soon as they qualify, and they were working as they were still studying. So it's a very important area of work that has been neglected in our country for a very long time, to at great cost mm-hmm. to the economy and to many of our young people.
Your Honourable Fukus.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. I promise you. DG, both of these are not in the presentation, but maybe just taking advantage of the opportunity. One is that I'm sure your own integration processes, the higher education and training, is going well, and that by the time you take over officially, then you. So in other words, I'm just saying, I'm hoping that you're progressing well towards that. Two, DG. Last week,
There was a coverage about the University of Stellenbosch and language, and probably you would just speed us up in terms of what that is, what that means, where that is. Thanks.
I think that's quite important. I actually wanted to come and cover it because we did a visit to you then, perhaps maybe it would be interesting to see where the issue is. But I think what has been raised, DJ, I think would need some time to spend as a committee. I think I'd recommend as well to Honorable Fransman on the college sector. Just to get a sense in terms, I've heard the minister speak, but just to get a sense in terms of where we are, where we want to see, where we want to go. I happen to be in Russia and France in January. And part of the visit, I visited schools of technology. And it's interesting because it's their college sector and what is able to do and produce. I mean, to the extent of even children at a primary level being in a technology school, a type of a college, being able to produce what they produce. Fortunately, these are the specs that are produced by a high school student in Russia. Who is learning already optimist, who could do testing, who could do produce. And that's what you would want to start engaging and see South Africa moving. And I'm adding to that point to say we need to respond to the challenges of the economy and be able to move a number of young people who at times, I mean, when you look at the issue of the college, the FETs now, I know DC in the FETs I've interacted with, The students are battling with the NCV because the level and where they've pitched it, it needs a person who has passed the matric. And hence you get learners who are coming from school who couldn't cope with the learning at high school, therefore opted to go to these colleges. But then they are still stuck with what they couldn't cope with and end up with a lot of dropouts at NCV level. That is part of the challenge that we have. And I'm sort of saying that personally we need to deal with intensively, look at what we want to achieve out of this college, just deal in detail as part of the discussion, and so that we can input into it. Because I don't think where we are sitting would be able to respond to the needs of the market, would be able to respond to what the economy demands at the level of FETs. They have the resources, the teaching and all that they could, but just to get it to that, so that even when learners or young people, because the other issues around the stigma of these colleges, we've got to turn them around, because people think that when you go to FETs or to college sector, it's because you are dumb. I mean, the minister said that as well. In townships, when you say I'm going to college, it has that connotation that you do not have the ability to be in university. And some of the young ones would everybody say wants to go to university. So we've got to increase that level. Even when we talk around that, and at least we've got to be trying to constantly popularize the issue of the college. But lastly, Titi, is the issue again of NSFAS driving the awareness of its existence in our communities. Last year we raised an issue again with NSFAS because they gave us to say their target is to reach about 3 schools in rural areas. And we're saying, but what is the impact of that? And this is the outcome, because if learners know that I can apply for tests, they would definitely, those who apply in September, would immediately apply for it. But I can tell you majority of the students who know that they need to apply in September, they don't apply for financial aid because most of them don't even know what is available. So we've got to try and get NSFAS to the level that it's out there, somehow have a vigorous public awareness campaign that they've got to give themselves that target, increasingly to be aware. As I do this roadshow, either through media, either through print, or whatever that is there. Because if they communicate to students who are already in tertiary, those who are still in high school at a level, lower level, they don't know about it. So those are the targets that we need to get. That is the target that we need to get exposing NSFAS to. There are a number of them who don't know that there's anything called NSFAS. And therefore, we'll have to deal with the challenge of the resources that are required not having enough. But at least you would know that the message has gone out clearly to everybody that needs to have. And then the last one, DT, is I think even in colleges we need to do a monitoring of this bursary scheme implementation. To what extent do learners at SET colleges know that I can have access to my fees, my accommodation, my books being paid for? Because we'll continue. Later this year we'll come back to annual reports and see underfunding. You know, these are the things that contribute towards that. And we've got to try at this level, at this point, try and address those things so that we don't end up with departments or ESFAS or whoever underspending in certain categories when we have a majority of students needing the funding. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can start by saying I think that I'm glad that you all had a wonderful holiday, because if I just keep in my mind all of the things that this committee is going to be working on, I understand that you're going to be looking at the CETA SLAs and interrogating those quite rigorously, and that's a whole new learning area for you. The department is busy finalizing its strategic plan to accompany other budgets, and I'm looking forward to engaging you on that, because so many of the issues that you raise you'll be looking for in that. Then there's the NSFAS report, which was a huge process. And then you've asked, and I want to support you, about the FET colleges in particular. I want to come back to that. But if I just look at NSFAS and remember and apologize to Member Nkantani that I didn't answer the question about central admissions, but I want to put it on the table now because it's quite critical. This is an idea that's been on the table in the higher education sector for several years. I think it may even have started when Minister Asmal was Minister of Higher Education. It's still on the table, but there's a pilot project in KwaZulu-Natal where instead of applying at three different universities, you apply in one central office, pay one application fee, and then that gets channeled to universities in the region. We think that there's a great deal of advantage in that model, but the reserve of the universities is the anxiety of a dependence on an external system, and if there's a problem with the system, the chaos that would cause, because we already know the tight time frames. But one of the questions that's going to arise is that when you say learners need to know more about NSFAS, is the mechanism that NSFAS uses at the moment is there's an allocation to an institution, so the institution is able to match students that are accepted with financial needs, so they allocate to students that are accepted, and that's quite a complex set of arrangements to manage in the time frames that we have. If I can just talk quickly to the fact that we will be tabling the strategic plan, I'm anxious to get your time frames so that we're ready in time. But you may have noticed in relation to the question about the process of establishing the new department that a week or two ago we advertised for DDGs. So that will be a great day for me personally. When we have new leadership in terms of the Director General in the Department for Higher Education, for Technical Vocational Education and Training, for the skills and for admin. And I'm hoping that the engagement that we have about the strategic plan will overlap with new people coming in so that you can talk to new people themselves. But if we look at the FET sector, as Chairperson has indicated, I would say that there are probably four key things that stand out for me. One is the role of the committee in looking very carefully at how we're managing the administrative transition, the legal transition, the administrative transition. There's going to be change in legislation that you're going to have to be dealing with. There's constitutional amendments that you're going to have to be dealing with. The second thing that is absolutely urgent and pressing is the question that several members have raised, which is about alignment of the colleges to the real needs in our country, both in direct employment and in the development of our country. That means alignment, as Member Mangena has indicated, with those scarce skill areas at that level of technologist in the occupational areas, making sure that we have the artisans, making sure that the certificates and diplomas in the appropriate occupations that are needed are developed in a way that industry has confidence in them, that employers have confidence in them, that workers have confidence in them. And, Chairperson, there's lots that we could talk about here, but maybe that will come out in the strategic plan. There's some wonderful new projects. The third thing is with the alignment, to really address issues of improving the quality of teaching and learning, and we can report on that. And the fourth one is several people have picked up, several members have picked up, is managing these complex realignments, both in terms of governance and legally, as well as with the needs of industry and commerce, is with the growth of the sector. We have to expand. We have 50 colleges with over 200 sites. But we know that these colleges are going to be important vehicles for social development, for example, in rural areas. They need to be linked to the rural development strategy. We need to be providing the kinds of various entrepreneurial, agricultural extension officer work. So the growth is complex. Now, to come to the specific questions, what have we done to ensure that the registration problems are dealt with? We've gone in, we facilitated conversations between students and management so that resolutions have been achieved, usually in written form. One can then hope that...
Firstly, I would like to take this opportunity to welcome members. I hope all of us tried to have some time to rest. And we are refreshed coming back. Firstly, to say that the chairperson, Honorable Maria Fransman, is not here today. He's out of the country on a business for Parliament. So therefore, I'll be the chairperson of the day.
Morning.
It feels good to be chair. Okay. Those who do not know me, I'm Mamuloko Kubai. I'm the whip of the committee. Colleagues, I think one of the things is just to acknowledge the importance of today as we are sitting here, 20 years after the unbanning of all political parties. That's why I'm saying it feels good to be chairing a portfolio committee of education today under that historical moment and historic day. It's quite important for us, as well as we gather here today, to acknowledge that and appreciate its importance and its relevance of today's city as the Portfolio Committee of Higher Education and Training. We cannot overlook the importance of that day. It was one step that also helped in getting us to where we are as a democratic country and democratic society, where we are able, all of us, to sit around this table in this room and discuss a matter of importance, the future of the children of South Africa, the future of tomorrow. Colleagues, as you might have noted, I think I'll acknowledge as well the presence of the media here today. Welcome. And other stakeholders who are here. As you note, in terms of the agenda, we'll go directly to the briefing by the Department of Higher Education and Training. We have the DG here. Welcome, DG. Hope also you tried to rest. On behalf of the department, she'll be doing the presentation, Ms. Mary McCall, to give us just a briefing in terms of what were the issues during the registration period, intervention to assist the students, and then later we'll deal with our ministers as the committee. But I think we have a presentation over in front of us. I don't want to waste time. We'll go straight to the presentation, and then later we'll interact with the presentation so that we get a sense and the feel of what is happening. Over to you, teacher.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I agree with you that it's a very wonderful day today, so I'm also pleased to be here with you today. And thank you for the invitation. And we look forward to a hard-working year ahead. I think that we'll be seeing a great deal of each other. Chairperson, we received the invitation and we were asked to get a briefing on 2010 student enrollment in higher education and EVT colleges, various initiatives to improve throughput rates, some of the challenges that students have experienced during registration periods, and some of the interventions in place to assist students with registration. So the content of the presentation is on page 2 of the handout, and I thought that it might be useful, Chair, to just remind people of the policy framework within which admission happens, and I'm going to be looking at that first with reference to information that we have given previously, but which it might be useful to just remind people of. I'm going to look firstly at universities, then at colleges. Then we're going to give a report on 2010 registration process and progress with that, some of the challenges. We'll look at problems associated with NSFAS in particular, and the issue of the update on the upfront payments. You've also asked us to look at plans to improve the throughput rate. If we look at the policy framework for universities in particular, we need to understand that there are challenges of the system being able to accommodate the number of young people who would like to attend university. We do have a policy framework for guiding the size and shape of the system, and that is taken forward through the enrollment planning exercise, which links to the teaching input subsidy. So basically, the department reaches agreement with universities about how many students they can accept across what programs. And the subsidy is linked to those numbers. And there's some real challenges for the system here. The subsidy is set, and if universities choose to exceed the enrollment that's set, they don't get additional subsidy. So that means where universities take in students more than the number they've agreed to with the department, they don't receive a subsidy and they have to fund the costs entirely from their own resources. And that represents a significant challenge to universities, but it's part of a carefully planned exercise which I'll explain. Now, that carefully planned exercise, I'm going to just take two slides, Chairperson, is that firstly, we understand that our higher education system has to contribute both to our national human resource development challenges as well as the challenges of the knowledge economy growing our research priorities. We also know that we need to increase enrollment and graduate output in scarce and critical skills. We need to steer the system. We need enough graduates across disciplines and across sectors to make sure that we can sustain our development. And there are areas that are particularly critical and important. For example, the Minister for Health is very concerned about the production of sufficient numbers of doctors. And so we have to prioritize the scarce and critical skills. It's also when universities agree with us on how many students they can take, they have to match that to the available resources. What's their capacity in terms of, for example, in engineering with the laboratories, in science with the laboratories. And so it's a very carefully planned exercise. But one of the things that we need to remember is that if the system is inefficient, and you have large numbers of students who are moving slowly through the system or not succeeding, it's actually occupying space that would be able to take in more people if we had higher graduation and success rates. So we also, and you've raised that in your invitation to the meeting, we are also focusing on working with universities in different ways to improve success so that students move more efficiently through the system. So we do have a differentiated approach to enrollment planning. But once the agreements are there between the institutions and the minister in terms of how many students can be accepted in terms of their enrollment plans across the different courses at different levels or across the different faculties. The institutions manage the admission themselves. And fundamentally, most institutions work on a point system based on the National Senior Certificate. Many institutions go beyond the National Senior Certificate in terms of understanding that often performance at matric is related to class and it's related to opportunities to succeed. And many universities have programs which seek to identify talent which may not have been recognized in the NSC. So institutions will develop their own point systems. And then across programs, there may be different entrance requirements and different processes. Many universities have moved to a centralized admission system. Some universities still have a faculty-based admission system, but most faculties will determine through their academic processes what are the criteria for admission. Some highly competitive faculties, such as, for example, medicine, will have extensive selection process, including interviews, etc. So that's a slide which just explains these concentric circles of decision-making. The Department of Education considers the plans and proposals of each institution within the context of the national planning targets. Institutions have the responsibility to indicate what growth they would like to see, in terms of the multiple factors such as the infrastructure, staff-student ratios. Then institutions have specific input-output targets that's approved by the minister. It links to the funding, and then each council confirms that. So it's an interactive process with the universities. Just, this is a reminder slide, but this just gives you a sense of enrollments over the years from 1996. To 2010 and the gradual increase from in 1996 just below 600,000 to 2010. We still would be verifying the information coming in from the universities, but an increase to over 800. At the same time, government funding has increased, and the slide shows two different categories of funding in a total. The block grants are the block grants that cover the teaching input subsidy, which is linked to enrollment planning, and the earmark grants are linked specifically to, for example, science, education, technology, medicine, capital, research, and teaching development. And so you can see that there is an increase. We would argue that we would need more money, and we'll persuade the committee of that so that the committee can work in support of that. In terms of fields of study, I recognize the importance of science, engineering and technology and medicine, and clearly those are critical and scarce skills, but I also am concerned about some disciplines within the humanities which are not as subscribed as I believe we need, such as, for example, history. But if we look at science and engineering and technology, which is the blue line, there is an increase. But I think many would argue that we need an even greater increase, hence the current expenditure in terms of capital and teaching support in those fields. In terms of graduation, it's very interesting to see that science, engineering and technology has seen a steady rise. Often that's associated with more intensive selection procedures. In terms of colleges, there has been a huge increase in college enrollment. Now, this is a slide that I would like to delete before I showed it to you because there's something in it that's puzzled me. It was a slide that we presented to you last year, and it shows the increase from 54,000 in 1987 prior to 1990, increasing to 470,000. But I need to come back to the committee to interpret that, because when we look at the slide that was presented at the same meeting of last year, which I'm also just refreshing your memory around, It shows an increase in 2007 of 25,000 to projected enrollment this year of 177 and 120. So my understanding of the discrepancy between those two are what it is that we're counting. And sometimes it's individual students and sometimes it's a multiple of courses. So I want to apologize for that confusion. But the background is that we have been able to see a massive increase in terms of student enrollment projections, which still need to increase further. We would like to present to the committee at some time when the work is complete our studies in terms of international comparisons. There's an indication that we've been using in public debates, which is that our college enrollment is about half the size of our university enrollment. It's probably more closer to 60%. And there's an argument that in many developed economies and developing economies, that ratio is reversed, and there's many more students in colleges because one is there developing the artisan technologist sector. But we need to grow it more, but in the meantime, we've been able to grow it on the basis of the recapitalization grant. There's been enrollment growth that's been maintained between 43 and 46%. The throughput rate is improving, but I am putting into place a study to properly understand what's been happening with the NCV results. The minister did, well, the Department of Education did publish the NCV results, and they publish it subject by subject. And that doesn't give us enough information in terms of cohort development, cohort success, and it doesn't give sufficient comparative information year by year. So we're developing a project to interrogate that much more intensively so that it will inform our approaches to improving teaching and learning. The next slide, you'll remember that we're in a transition process, which I'll cover just now. The funding that has been in provinces has now been ring-fenced and allocated to the National Department of Education, and then through service level agreement will be reallocated to the provinces for the colleges. And we are seeking continually to be able to increase funding so that we can increase access, and there's some very interesting and innovative developments there. This is what we are expecting in terms of enrollments this year. Enrollments, of course, are still underway. You'd allow me to blow my nose. It's either that or you must listen to me sniffing. Thank you, Chairperson. So, for those who have been familiar with the sector, you'll immediately be interested in the stats that we're putting up there. For those of you that are new, you might find it puzzling. Basically, the National Certificate Vocational has been in place in the colleges for 3 years. It's a broad-based program which is an equivalent to the National Senior Certificate. It provides young learners with a solid base in terms of literacy and numeracy, and then gives them an orientation towards a particular vocation. The native courses are very old courses, which have historically been associated with the apprenticeship system. They have varying degrees of acceptance within industry in terms of their relative up-to-datedness, and we're going to be able to brief you during the course of the year in terms of steps that we're taking in the direction of updating those. But to the NCV, the native courses were being phased out. We've now indicated to colleges that if the particular industry supports the maintenance of a particular in course, they can apply for permission to continue with that. And that is our quality filter in terms of whether an industry considers that that course is sufficiently useful for their purposes. But you'll see that we're anticipating an enrollment of about 122,000 this year, but that's still in process. The other thing, and that links to the earlier clarity I need to get back to you on, is that the enrollment figures don't necessarily include something which is a new development. I'm not sure I was able to report on this to the committee at the end of last year. But when the committee will be aware that the minister extended the National Skills Development Strategy for an additional year, we will be doing the course of the year briefing you in terms of the development of the National Skills Development Strategy 3. But in extending NSD 2, we've indicated to the CETAs that we expect in their service level agreements for them to be able to achieve, in addition to what they would have been expected to, some of our new priorities, which includes focusing on the development of artisans using the public FET colleges in particular, supporting some of the transitional programs that exist across universities of technology and FET colleges. And so we're still waiting to see the extent to which some of the CETA funding has been diverted towards the colleges in terms of programs and also in terms of work-based learning programs. The other thing is that members will be aware that colleges can offer diploma certificate courses in collaboration with universities of technology in particular, and those aren't listed. So if I can now move, Chairperson, to where we are with monitoring registration. We've put into place a task team that monitors registration and keeps in touch with institutions on a daily basis. We also have three dedicated telephone lines where the public can call in to make inquiries about not only funding, but also registration inquiries. The team meets regularly, and it must be noted, as I'm sure every member of the committee gets besieged by people from their constituencies and friendship circles, huge volumes of letters of inquiry and complaints in terms of exclusions. What we did in preparation for setting up the task team in the second week of January, I can check the date, is that the minister met with Higher Education South Africa, the EXCO of HESA. We met with the Union of Students, which is a body representing all of the SRCs, and not in January, but November and December, we met with the South African Colleges Principals Organization. Apart from work that's been done by department officials, the ministers also visited DUT, University of Zululand, and Tshwane University of Technology to monitor and assess the registration process. And he's met with management and SRCs of these institutions. And he's still taking further visits. We're just assessing to see where it's useful for him to go. In terms of monitoring registration at colleges, I don't see Member James. But we've been, Member James has been in touch with me when he's been aware of problems at colleges. The colleges are in the process of a transition between being a provincial and a national function. Members will remember from Minister Gordon's medium-term budget policy statement that he indicated that this is going to be a national function, and anticipation of that the funds are moving nationally, and the first step towards that is a conditional grant. But legally, they still are a provincial function. And we are currently, myself and the acting DDG for vocational and further vocational education and training, Dr. Becky Mhlobo, we're visiting each province where we are meeting with all of the college principals, all of the college chairs, the provincial officials, so that we can make sure that there's a good basis of, a good basis and a good set of relationships to maintain this transition. I should have been in Mpumalanga today. I was in Limpopo yesterday, and Dr. Mhlobo is representing me in Mpumalanga. So we've already been to Gauteng, Western Cape, Northern Cape. Next week we're doing Eastern Cape and KZN. And we're working our way through all of the provinces. In March, we will be taking a cabinet memo to start some of the legal processes about the transition. But why that's important is because the provincial departments are where the capacity currently exists and where the legal responsibility currently exists. So it's their responsibility to monitor registration, but there's a good cooperative relationship. Where suspected problems are brought to our attention, then we work closely both with the colleagues in the colleges as well as in the province to understand the nature of the problems and to give advice and leadership. In terms of NSF, Chairperson, the committee is aware that the minister appointed a committee to investigate and to review the functioning of NSFAS. That committee asked the minister for extension. It was due to report before the end of December, and they persuaded us that the volume of work that was required meant that they should report at the end of January. We have received the report. We will be studying it and releasing it for public comment at the end of February. That may be something that the committee, depending on the time and the volume of work before you, might want to play an active role in considering and advising the minister in terms of NSFAS. But for the interim, the National Student Financial Aid Scheme in December interacted with universities, and all institutions received letters from NSFAS indicating the process for 2010 allocations, and it gave them information about the maximum award size, the minimum award size. It told them that we expect quarterly reports, and all institutions were informed of the availability of funds to assist with registration payments. They were reminded of the application of the means test because the fundamental policy governing the allocation of the NSFAS money is that we're trying to ensure that we reach the poorest families. And we also asked that all committees should have a financial aid committee, which would include the SRC. The majority of institutions did in fact establish financial aid committees, and it's noticeable that it's institutions where perhaps committees haven't been functioning well that the communication difficulties have resulted in protests. Some institutions have been slow in applying for the upfront payments even in previous years, and so we are monitoring that on a daily basis and working with the institutions to assist with their efficiency. As of Friday, when the slide was prepared, only five institutions had made use of the upfront payment facility. That doesn't change the responsibility of the universities to ensure that the upfront payment of students who are NSFAS holders are covered by the institution. But one of the things that we do need to note is that there are serious challenges of staffing of financial aid offices. At this time of the year, of course, there's a seasonal complete crush, and this is a matter that the acting CEO of NSFAS, who stepped down in December, has raised and which will be taken forward in the review processes. In terms of colleges, this is a reminder again of information we provided last year, is that in 2006, Minister of Finance announced the allocation of NSFAS for college bursaries, and that was to, again, be based on financially needy, academically capable students into FET. So the money that was made available over the last 3 years has increased hugely, and more students have been assisted, and you'll get the information regarding the 2010 allocation with the budget speech on the 16th. Yeah. Let me skip that, but basically the conditions are that it's geared towards the NCV, and it's a means test. Colleges make the final determination on which students are awarded bursaries, and they are able to take into account both financial need and academic performance, and then NSFAS processes. All of that will also be reviewed in the NSFAS review process. So for the FET colleges, it covers fees, textbooks, accommodation, travel. So for the bursaries at college level, the National Department of Education allocates bursary funds to colleges, monitors and supports and trains. The provincial department, where there is at the moment greater capacity, also monitors and supports and does a training workshop. But the colleges have a huge amount of work to do in terms of student support and bursary committees and administering, and we are putting a lot of energy into supporting the colleges with those responsibilities. Now, in terms of some of the challenges, universities have been slow in applying the NSFAS policy on upfront payments. I think that sometimes universities have ways of operating and procedures that are in place, and there's a whole range of hardworking people carrying forward those policies, and when there's a change, perhaps it takes time to filter through. So we did have to send a letter last year. Sorry, we sent a letter out on Friday. Let me just see if I've lost my place there. So we sent a letter to all institutions on Friday reminding them. I've had replies from many institutions where they've in fact indicated that they're applying the policy there. Zululand, there was a particular problem, and a representative from the ministry spent a day there on Thursday, was able to bring the students and management together, reach a common understanding, and then notices were put up across the campus giving the clarity around NSFAS. Sorry, that was a bit of a duplicate. In terms of just general registration problems that are not only associated with NSFAS, we've had disruptions at DUT and TUT. At DUT, again, the ministry played a very strongly interventionist role. Durban University of Technology and Tshwane University of Technology. Apologies for that. Durban University of Technology, we were able to reach agreement, and at Zululand, at Tshwane University of Technology, there have been quite serious difficulties on the Soshanguve campus. Our registration was suspended on Friday, and I was expecting registration to be reinstated on the Soshanguve campus yesterday or today. And that was simply just so that they could have greater controlled access, because it was the view of members of the SRC and of management that some of the protests were of people who weren't legitimate students. The Soshanguve campus I've covered, and so we're resuming registration today. I'm sorry, this has got... Okay, improving throughput. If I can move to just what we're doing to improve the throughput rate at universities. There's three interventions that we're using. One is the foundation program funding, teaching development funds, and then funds for improving physical teaching facilities. The foundation program funding is a mechanism by which for selected students, universities can extend the standard curricula by 1 year. And what the foundation funds can be used to improve, to provide additional academic staff, new teaching equipment. So in between 2007 to last year's financial year, we allocated $403 million to foundation programs, which meant that 37,000 new undergraduate students who may have been underprepared but potentially able were assisted. Between 2010-11 to 2011-12, we're hoping to reach 48,000 with a $517 million allocation to universities. This is an allocation that universities have to apply for. I keep getting a duplicate, so I'm sorry about that. Now, the Teaching Development Grant is a separate thing to the Foundation Grant. I've already explained that universities get an allocation which is based on the number of students they teach by agreement with the ministry. The Teaching Development Fund, we are changing the way in which that's operated. Up until now, the Teaching Development Fund has virtually been proportional to enrollment. But we're saying we want universities to focus their use of the Teaching Development Fund on particular courses which are high risk for failure, so that they can focus on the specific project to improve throughput in what some people call killer courses. And so we are taking a portion of the Teaching Development Grant in the next 2 years to make that available for institutions to use for initiatives for improving teaching and development. The earmark, the third intervention is the earmark funds for improving teaching facilities. Because improving throughput also depends on having proper facilities. In between 2007-08 to this financial year, a total of 3.5 billion in earmark funds was allocated to universities for enhancing teaching services. And a further 3.2 million, I think that this comma is wrong, so 3.5 million and now 3.2 million has been allocated for 2010-2011-12. One of the things that's hidden there, but has been a big feature of protest, particularly at DUT, is the question of student housing. Universities are not evenly distributed across the country. That would be to be expected, but it does mean that there's large numbers of students who require student housing. And this is a crisis felt across many campuses where there is not enough student housing, and we have some work happening at the moment to see what we need to do, and then we would need to find the money. But at DUT in particular, it was a cause of tension. Plans to improve the throughput rates for NCV, there's many things happening and many more things being planned, about which we'll be able to brief you later. The big ideas are obviously to use qualifications and curriculum development as a mechanism for improving quality. That's linked to the fact that at the moment we have centralized assessment, examinations, and quality assurance systems. Whether or not in the long term, as the system develops, it should be centralized or it should be much more institutionally located is something that's under discussion. There's a variety of initiatives underway in terms of supporting lecturers. There's several projects which are linked to donor funding, and I'm currently working on a proposal that we'll be able to bring to the committee for an intensive project on supporting lecturers, as well as the fact that we are introducing particular professional qualification requirements for lecturers. That's work that's underway. Those were gazetted, and we're in a consultative period in relation to that proposal. We also look at the exam results and offer focused lecturer support so that we have a sense of where the gaps are. There are particular interventions in terms of academic support programs for maths and maths lit in particular, and the student services in the colleges are working on the issue of advising students in terms of proper placement. And then the whole issue of a culture of learning and teaching and monitoring students' attendance for improved retention, and just making sure that there's a there's mechanisms for pastoral support in the colleges. So, Chairperson, I know that it's been a long presentation, but in terms of your letter of invitation, I think that we've been able to give you a work in progress, because registration is still underway, in terms of some of the challenges, some of the interventions, where we are with NSFAS, and work that's underway to improve throughput, with an understanding that there's still a great deal more to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DJ, for the presentation. I think one needs to appreciate the input. Voditi, there are quite some of the things that I have a bit of fundamental problems with, specifically on the institution's intake, and again on the issue of support for students. I mean, the committee has engaged in this first last year on the issue of startup preparation for the intake of January. But part of the engagement and the input from the committee was that the challenge with NSFAS and funding for students is not only at the level of NSFAS function, but it's at the implementation level at these institutions. And what we were trying to say was cautioning NSFAS to say, shall we try and make sure that we have a situation where we put some mechanism in place so that come 2010 registration period, we do not have a problem. And unfortunately, as we're sitting here, we're still getting the part of the report that you got in terms of the capacity, in terms of consistency, implementation of the registration fees for students as part of support within institution. And that lack of standardization is a bit of a challenge, and that has been raised by the committee even from last year when we engaged NSFAS, even through their reports. So it's a bit of a challenge from where I'm sitting, because you obviously have number of students being excluded again this financial year or this academic year because of those inconsistencies. But secondly, DG, it's the issue of the criteria of intake in this institution. I mean, looking at the presentation, you're highlighting that institution would develop their own guidelines. And what I want to check is that, is there a standardization process to say these are the principles that guide you as you develop this? Because we'll continue to have students protesting in institutions raising that we are being excluded. I mean, I've had letters as a member of committee when somebody says that because I was an SRC member, I've been targeted, I've been excluded. You know, so that such things don't arise from students, that I'm being excluded because of my political activism within the institution. And if that is in place, can you just share with the committee? But the other thing that I think from my side would be dealing with the issue of fee increment in institutions, which at times becomes the point of protests again. We might have a lesser number of these protests now, but compared to other years. But that has continued to be a challenge. I mean, you have where families, they can afford to pay, but because of this number of every year rising, I think we actually shared with the minister last year as well, to say various institutions actually targeted to raise their fees this year by 10 to 12% in terms of their increase. And we had requested that the minister looks into this matter quite seriously, because if you look at the situation whereby you have financial recession, there are constraints in terms of economic, and people are somehow, you know, can't afford, and you have institutions continue to raise the increments in terms of fees, doesn't that take us back in terms of those who can afford will end up in tertiary institutions and those who can't afford would end up being excluded? And again, looking at the capacity of NSFAS not being able to accommodate everybody. I mean, when we were getting the report as well, it was the issue of NSFAS having limited resources to be able to respond. The allocation going to institutions somehow, institutions because they want to broaden the allocation, therefore will gap. Such things will continue to ensure that will continue to result in a situation whereby you have a number of students being excluded who actually deserve and qualify to be in institutions. So that are the concern from where I'm sitting, but I'm going to open as well for members of the committee just to make comments as well as questions so that when you respond, at least you try and level this. But I'll come back on the issue of the college sector. I just wanted to deal with this fundamental issue that I have, and then later would open. I would come back to deal with this. I must get myself back from holiday and remember all the names. I'll start with Honorable Fufusa. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm trying to remember all the names from holidays. It's Honorable Fufusa, Honorable Buinamo. I must not forget that. Honorable Mange, And then Honorable Gina, you have your name, your hand up. And then Honorable Mbocha. They are gone. Honorable Dudley will be the next one. No, I'm in that line of
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DG, for always a clear presentation. Thank you for that. Yeah. And you must also know that you have our support. Yeah. DG, mine is whether you use choreography, aesthetics, or response, but it's a question around responsiveness. Last year, HISA presented to us a report, and it made a lot of headlines. And one of those worrying factors was the readiness or lack of entrance to university in terms of numeracy, counting, writing, expressing themselves in English, and so on. And a lot of other things. So my issue, I don't know if it's for now or for reflection, DG, to say that there is a report, and not only that report, a lot of other reports, but that one, in my mind, it stands quite, it's key in my mind. Have we intentionally responded, or is there the departmental plans, do they speak to the HISA report in particular? In a sense that I am responding to myself, I think that somewhere it is captured in terms of the foundation program and so on. I think that the academic support is also there, but I don't know. I don't want to take for granted. But I am asking whether HISA, the departmental plans, have factored in the HISA report. The second one for me is, again, the issue of responsiveness. In page 4, the DG is talking about enrollment to be matched to available resources, physical, human, and financial. I like that, and I'm sure the committee likes that too. But for me, it must also be matched to the needs of the economy. Because what are we providing for? What are all these things for? Are we responding to economy? In other words, if there is a skills audit, are we responding in our plans to the skills audit? And are we providing what the environment is waiting from us as the higher education sector? And in terms of throughputs, I'm interested to know, in the race breakdown, specifically in science and maths, in terms of increased enrollment, I can see that there is increased enrollment, but I am curious about the race breakdown in terms of that. And as far as the late release of matric results, has it had, what is the impact in the enrollment? What is the impact in NSFAS? What is the impact? Because there was a late release. So I'm just curious to understand what that has done. The last one for me is the projected college enrollment for 2010, and it being a provincial output. And again, the issue for me is responsiveness. Do these college, or are they responding to provincial needs? And not necessarily that is all. Provincial and beyond. I'd like to understand that, whether there is local relevance in what we do, because up until we respond to felt and experienced needs, can we say that education is relevant? And also, I think that we need more about colleges, because there were colleges that were closed, and of course the minister is very sensitive to re-energizing that space of colleges, and I'm sure there's a lot of work that seeks to be done in terms of that. So even though we do have colleges, do they respond to what is the proportion of colleges and what they offer to the population itself? Like, for example, if you go to Giani, because we went to Giani, is that enough for Giani? Is the college providing local response to felt and experienced needs locally? And I'm sure we're waiting for the NSFAS report that the DG is saying will be released. And also we are curious, I'm sure, about the CETA and the integration of all these departments into one. And thanks, DG. Sorry I was long.
Honorable Buinabu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, DG, we are quite aware that registration is resumed at Tshwane University of Technology, but the question is, what measures are in place to ensure that the protests this country has been experiencing over the past weeks is not going to resurface? Because if they are registering and there's nothing that has actually been put in place to make sure that now teaching and learning is going to resume undisturbed, then we're going to find ourselves running in circles. You see, DG, most of the students really go to universities for wrong reasons. Once they are on campus, some of them would want to begin to run the campus and not to study, to begin to tell the university administration staff what to do. And this is not their competence. Their competence is to learn. And I have realized that rules and regulations are put in place at universities and at any learning institution. But if you go to our universities, those rules and regulations are not actually being observed by students. Students would want to do as they please. The University, the University of Technology, for example, if you go there, you realize on campus there are people who have got nothing to do with university, who are not students, but they live on campus. They reside on campus. And these are the people who cause commotions and incite the students to go on strikes. They sell drugs. We saw on TV, I think it's on this past weekend, big plants of marijuana planted at Tshwane University of Technology. And you ask yourself, if these drugs can be planted on university and be watered, what is the duty of the ground staff if they cannot see what's growing on the ground on which they work? And I think we need to tackle issues such as this so that we are sure that people who are seen on campus are people who are registered to study on campus and nobody else. I mean, if somebody enters the campus, the security is there at the gate to monitor this movement, and somebody goes in and doesn't come out for a week and they don't worry. They don't go and check what happened to this person. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Minamo. Honorable Gina.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question will be around the presentation that DG, where she said the colleges can still apply for the allowance of having these native courses, if ever there are industries who still need that. And I'm just checking around the confusion that might be caused in the colleges around that issue as to say, is the department still going to fund for those, or we say if ever the industries still need the native courses, it should be fully funded by those industries. And the whole question around the issue of the lecturers and whatever, are we not causing somehow the confusion around our colleges on that issue of MCVs and native studies? And also, DG, I think you need to act to be a little bit quick on the issue of the provinces. Still, colleges still governed by the provinces, or are they solely on you as on the national level? Because really, there is a confusion and there is a frustration around the colleges, the FET colleges, as to say when they go to the CFOs of the provinces, it's as if they've got nothing to do. I'm quoting it. I can cite examples from KZN where they feel that they're being frustrated, really, as to say they end up don't really know where do they fall exactly. Should they go straight to the national office, to your offices, or is there anything that the provinces still have to do with those? So really, your visit, I think your visit will be of great help. And also, even around the whole question of the results for last year, DG, I know there is a confusion in the FET colleges. There are so many results that are pending where students do not know their future. What fate is it? Because there is this confusion again. I think you'll know, you'll understand what it is that I'm talking about. Really, the students are suffering. They don't know where to go as it is now because there are so many results that are still pending. And can you please, in your office, can you make sure that those things are being clarified? Lastly, DG, you talk of, when you talk of enrollment planning, where you need to increase the enrollment of skills, subjects and critical skills. I don't know really what is your intake in this, is to say, what link do you really have with the basic education? Because, you know, when you look at the results for this year, you see how poor were they, especially on these scarce subjects. As to say, I cannot expect you to sit there as higher education and wait for intake where there is nothing that is forthcoming. Really, I don't know how can we make sure that we link these two these two ministers to make sure that what is coming up, and I think you understand what is it you say. Because really, you cannot just sit there and wait for the enrollment for these scarce subjects, whereas we know very well there is nothing coming forth from metric. Looking at the results as how they were this year, maybe I cannot get into that basic, but really, I think you should now and again, if you make sure that you increase enrollment, you also help the lecturers there at the higher level. But really, you need to go back and assist there so that you can get a good intake for your output to be good in the higher education sector. Thank you, Chairman.
Thanks, Honourable Tina. Honourable Mangan.
Well, thank you, DG. I think the briefing was very comprehensive, and you touched quite a lot of aspects relating to higher education. But I just wanted to ask one or two questions. One related to graduation rates. You talked about that too, but we know that graduation rates are a function of underprepared students that come into universities. Not enough capacity on the part of the universities in terms of lecture rooms, dormitories that you also referred to. They all have an impact on this. Teaching staff, the numbers, I understand that some of the universities do not have enough lecturers, and they have serious problems of overwork. They are overstretched. They've got tight budgets, and yet they are supposed to improve these graduation rates, give the country the skills it needs, and so on. You refer to some interventions that the department is engaged in, especially from page 35 or slide 35 to 38. I know this is ongoing, but it started in 2007, according to this presentation. What sense do you have? Are we getting somewhere in terms of this increasing capacity? I know you can't do much about the underpreparedness of students except to offer remedial or foundation studies. Secondly, the another message this you didn't raise. There is the South African Research Chair Initiative that's initiated by DST and working through the National Research Foundation, of course, meant to improve research capacity and output in our universities, give more resources, but also give some additionality, bringing in some academic staff from elsewhere, mainly from abroad and so on. And by this year, if all goes well, there ought to be 210 such researchers. Are we there? We have 110.
Chair, did you say we shouldn't talk about colleges?
I was saying I would come back to the college specifically.
Okay.
I think it needs more attention
okay.
in terms of the debate. So
I'll come back when you come.
Okay. Honorable Mponchan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, DJ. I would have loved to go page by page or slide by slide because you have raised quite a number of issues which some of them need some clarity. For instance, on page 17, or just before I go to registration, there is this, the Central Application Center. How well is that center working? Because I've met quite a number of students who claim to have applied through that center, but universities, or they did not get any response at all. If they did, the letters would just say, pending, 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 pending. Come registration time, they're frustrated. They go from one institution to another, they're told, pending. I don't know how well that center is working. If we could get some explanation, that is. And on page 17, there is that task team which is monitoring registration. I would have loved to get a report or something, what sort of challenges they meet or responses when they move from one institution to another. And also on page 18, I'm not going through all the pages, I'm just giving examples now. On page 18, you are reporting class teacher that the minister has visited some of these institutions. He has met, for instance, with the Union of Students. But there's a problem there. I know after the minister's visit in some institutions, tensions have flared up among the students, because you know what happens? This Union of Students does not represent all student movements at particular institutions. Then after the visit, you find that tensions flared up. For instance, the minister was going to visit University of Zululand on a Tuesday. Now, just a day before the minister's visit, some students wanted to address some students, and they were arrested. In fact, they spent the whole week, just imagine the whole week, at the cells, denied bail as if they had committed. And such things that are going on in some institutions are really worrying, you know. And the provincial departments monitoring registration, how do they do it? Provincial, because I will understand that universities are autonomous institutions. Or colleges, is it colleges? Oh, okay. I thought it was. But my last question, still on registration. Did you say rightly that you did send a letter to all institutions about the upfront payment, but we're saying some universities are not responding to your letter. And we know for sure that there are some students, as we're speaking, who cannot register, though they are recipients, they've been recipients of NSFAS. And institutions are not responding to your letter. Is it because of this autonomy again, and how do you balance the two? I'll come back to some of the questions in the other slides, but let me rest my case for now. Thank you.
Honorable, I'll take the last one. I know it's a long one. I think would allow you, some of the things are comments, quite honestly. Yeah. Let's allow Honorable Dudley to speak.
Thanks, Didi. When you were speaking about the effect of funding on student enrollment, you mentioned interesting and innovative developments, and obviously this may not be the time, but it would be interesting to hear that expanded on. And then you mentioned about diverting funds to the colleges, or that from the CETAs, and sort of how beneficial or how feasible is that arrangement or something around there. The crisis point on campuses being related to student housing, obviously that sounds like a biggie and something that needs to be addressed urgently. And I'm just wondering, was there something in place already happening, or what's going on there? I know this has been touched on, but the protests being the not legitimate students being on campus, and what's making these campuses vulnerable to that kind of thing, and has there been some kind of research done on that? And then, yeah, just lastly, with the matric results, how they're affecting your situation at the moment. Thanks.
This is just, I think, would give you an opportunity. I think the majority of some of the things our comments would like to hear your views, but others, it's mainly questions that would get a response. But I think the two things that I think as committee we need to provide direction on, and issues of saying that in institution, Honorable Mwinam, I mean, in institution where there are criminal activities, that should be left as pure criminal activities, that the institution must just bring police in and deal with it. It's the management of this institution that must be held accountable. And that can be confused with the need and the importance of student representatives in campuses. I felt that at some point you sounded like you are discouraging student representatives and student activism. So I thought that that's from where I'm sitting as chair, it came across that way, and which could be a bit problematic because they play an important role if they sit in part of the management and discuss issues to manage and agree upon these things and report back to their students, and therefore assist in the functioning, effective functioning of institutions. And perhaps maybe I'm speaking from experience of having been a student leader myself and how they have played a role and been able to assist. And then, again, as well, what I thought that should be assisting, maybe we should have a thorough discussion on maybe perhaps later, just to ask TT to come with an NSFAS review report for us to engage, even because as part of the stakeholders, because we are critical stakeholders sitting here as Parliament, and that our role shouldn't be reduced there. So I would appreciate that the sooner you are able to come through with that report together with NSFAS, come through so that we can engage in it, because we've made a number of views as the committee, and we'd like to see them coming through, especially being coming from constituencies and getting these issues. But again, the issue of that progress report, I think Honorable Dudley and Honorable Vukusa raised the issue of the CETAs. Perhaps maybe just as Sarah, we might not be able to deal with it now intensively. But a discussion where it gives us a clear indication where we are, what are the issues, and how you look, because from one sitting, I sense that there's already a look into the future, how the CETAs should be responding. I mean, that transfer of funds and as well utilizing the colleges sector. That, to me, gives me a sense of already looking forward. So it would be important for us as the committee to get that sense from the department so that when we move in the same length and take a step forward. But let me just give you an opportunity to respond, and then we'll open just another round for members to round up some of the issues.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the members of the committee for the engagement. I really value the opportunity to engage because I think, Chairperson, the more that we have a common understanding, the better work we'll be able to do together. So thank you for the questions. Chairperson, the other thing is that I might just take the liberty of sometimes signalling, as you have, where I think that there's a particular issue the committee, I would value the committee pursuing. And so I might also just indicate that. Just firstly, you're correct. The NSFAS report is going to be made public, but the role of the Portfolio Committee is critical. I think that the portfolio committee is going to be assisting the minister in terms of his responsibilities for policy formulation by playing a leading role. We won't be doing anything other than requesting public comment, but I would imagine that you would be leading that. So we will talk about how to work on that. Right. The first question that I want to address is an interesting one. And that is the question of the frustration that the committee feels about the lack of thorough preparation and the crisis that one sees in institutions at the beginning of every year. And our assessment is that where families of young learners manage application processes timelessly, the crisis is much reduced. And there's a great deal of work we need to do to explain, particularly to first-generation university students, that it's not the same as school, as schools used to be, where you arrive in January and say, I want to be registered. In fact, applications close in September. And that is not, I think, generally understood, particularly in first-generation families. So the universities that are buckling with pressure at the moment, it will be particularly where you have what we call the drop-in students. Now, I would never want to say you go away. And universities are now coping with large numbers of students who haven't previously applied, haven't applied for any space. If families apply timelessly, they've applied by September, they've applied for any space by September, their matric results are processed, and their students know where they stand. But we have large numbers of people coming in late, and we call those drop-ins. So it's a question of public education. It's a question of better advice at school level, greater encouragement. You know, some of the very well-functioning schools automatically help the students to apply for university. So it's a career guidance issue. It's a public information issue. But it does mean that there's huge pressure at this time of the year. And I want to link that to your question about the late results. I think that there's a particular pressure on registration this year, and it comes from two quarters. Number one is that we had to really work very closely with Umalusi and Basic Education to try and get the electronic results to universities as quick as possible, even before the release. And we also have many universities starting slightly earlier to accommodate the longer July break because of the World Cup. So the every day counts at this time of the year, and it's been contracted, and I think we have extra pressure. A later knowledge of the results and an earlier registration. The second point is about NSFAS and the work that the committee did last year to talk to NSFAS about having mechanisms in place. Now, the issue is that the NSFAS allocates money to the institutions, and then the institutions distribute that money, and that's the blockage. The outgoing CEO of, acting CEO of NSFAS has written a briefing note for the newly appointed CEO. And I noticed in that report that he's arguing that we need to think very seriously about not creating NSFAS regional centers, but having NSFAS funded staff in each institution so that we can manage it quite tightly. So when mechanisms are not in place, that will be linked to the different levels of operational managerial efficiency at different universities. And some universities are coping much better than others. Some are running a very tight ship, and some are struggling. The next question that I want to address and comment is the question of exclusions. Now, I have indicated that the minister met with Higher Education South Africa's executive in the second week of January. And the question of exclusions was discussed there, and I think that I was looking through my notes to see if I can get the exact wording, but I'll pull it from my head. is that the universities were absolutely explicit that where a student is both academically deserving and financially needy, they will by all means do everything they can to assist that student to get through. Sometimes that means that they'll allow registration even if previous year's fees haven't been paid, but it means an accumulated debt. Now, universities are uneven, and we're working with HESA to make sure that HESA provides leadership to the sector itself by generating models of best practice and benchmarking against practice and sharing best practice. But the principle that the EXCO of HESA committed themselves to was that if you have an academically deserving student, they will by all means seek to make sure that there's not a financial exclusion. Now, Chairperson, the inference of that is that where students fail, there's less inclination to go the extra mile in terms of financial support. And the message to young people is that this is an opportunity that you must grasp with both hands and not conduct yourself as you've described, because there's very few second chances in a system that's so competitive. And that's the message that we need to be taking out. In terms of financial exclusions, the only thing that we can comfort ourselves with is that the NSFAS amount of money is directed towards the poorest of the poor. So the poorest families qualify, get the financial support. I would like to see that amount of money being more and the definition of relative poverty being more inclusive. But at least we know that to the extent that the national fiscus can allow, the poorest students are assisted on the basis of the means test. It's not enough. We would like more. We'll continue to work towards that. Chairperson, you raised a very important question, and I do think that this is something that the sector must be engaged on. You see, and it links, in fact, to your first question. Your first question, and I'm going to link it to the chairperson's question, was you reminded us of the work of HESA, of Nan Yeld in particular, in terms of the benchmark testing. Now, the benchmark testing, the results of which were presented to the committee last year, unfortunately, I think Nan Yeld herself came second, and she may not have had the full attention, and it may still be worth talking to her about progress, although she's on sabbatical this year. Is the benchmark tests are a diagnostic instrument to help universities understand the differing levels of performance within their first year cohort so that they can direct their teaching and learning interventions towards a group of students. If that benchmark test indicates that the students are underprepared, the challenge is for universities to have the teaching and learning interventions that will assist. But what's interesting is your question about how do we assess academic merit. And the fundamental approach in many countries, most countries and certainly here, is that you take the result of the National Senior Certificate and you say this will give us an indication of which students are likely to succeed. It's not a prize. It's not because you've done well, you can now go to university. It's because universities have the challenge of identifying which students are likely to succeed so that you don't have wasted resources and wasted human endeavor. The only indicator of that at the moment is the National Senior Certificate. Now, the question then is, does the National Senior Certificate identify evenly across society all of the children who are capable of succeeding, or is it a marker of education experience and the inequalities of that educational experience? That's a challenge to the sector, and the sector needs to respond to that. There have been models in previous years, and we would have to, in fact, I would encourage the committee to invite HESA to make a presentation on what interventions there are across different universities to identify highly talented students from schools which we consider to be disadvantaged. For example, the minister in his discussion with HISA put on the table the principle that students from quintile 1 students who've done well in the trick need to be financially supported because they represent the most disadvantaged families in our communities. And there's a, you need to, in fact, ask us. Give us information on how many students from quintile 1 schools got university entrance senior certificate. And we'll see that it's disproportionate. So there do need to be interventions to better judge academic merit and academic potential. And this is a university-wide project, I would say. The question of particular students being targeted, one of the functions of the task team, and I'm responding to two questions here, if any students feel that they've been unfairly treated, those are precisely the cases in which we would ask institutions for a report. So if an SRC member feels that they've been targeted on the basis of their political activities rather than they didn't do the work because they were so busy on the SRC, we would certainly want to hear and ask the institution for a report, and the daily work of the task team will be responding to such cases. I need now to just look at the question of the fee increments. We have done a study of the fee increments across the universities, and there is a we will be appointing a review committee this year to review university funding, in fact, university and college funding, because it's difficult to really get an assessment on the basis of a single year increase relative to CPIX, because there's always negotiations within the universities, and you need to be able to get a sense of the university fee increases in an institution over a period of time. Council will determine the fee increase. That's the nature of the institution's autonomy. And councils will determine the fee increase based on the budget, which will include as its income the subsidy received from government and student fees, and it must balance the budget on the basis of that income. Sometimes it's third stream income donations, but basically it's a subsidy and the student fees. And what has been shown by the sector over the last 10 years or so is that the subsidy is declining relative to student fees. So student fees are representing a greater percentage of the income to university and subsidy representing less. So that interrogation of how the balance sheet is prepared for university happens at council level at which students are represented. Every institution needs to, every year with a new student leadership, work through budget issues so there's an understanding. Linda, you're absolutely right about the need to link the planning mechanisms of the input and output of colleges and universities relative to skills needs. That's one of the very exciting things, I think, about the creation of this new department, because we're responsible under the leadership of the Deputy President for the Human Resource Development Strategy with the skills legislation, the National Skills Development Strategy, as well as for those agencies which distribute the skills levy, which we will align with skills planning using public institutions as the major instruments of delivery. The question of ill-discipline on student campuses, universities belong to communities, and that is represented in the way that councils are constituted to reflect communities, and we have to, from our communities, support universities where there is student ill-discipline to make sure that these are places of learning and teaching. The department can do its role, but when I come across a member of parliament who knows an institution so well, I am hoping that such a member will also play a leadership role working with us to make sure that issues such as growing of dacha on the grounds of the campus are dealt with. The college question I'm going to hold for next time, but I noted the questions, and they're very interesting questions, and we'll come back to that. Okay. Member Mangena has asked some very interesting questions. In terms of graduation rates, he's correct that it's a function of underpreparedness and weakness within institutions. And the question is, do we have enough staff? Now, you see, that links right back to my opening comments about the responsibilities of institutions and their councils and the department for planning. Institutions that are planning carefully are making sure that their admission is linked to capacity. Institutions that are not well managed are having huge numbers of drop-in students and are overwhelmed and are admitting beyond the capacity, put themselves at risk because then they have a larger student enrollment even than the subsidy allows, which means that the conditions are poor, which means that the graduation rates are poor. So we need stronger leadership in our universities to make sure that issues of poor graduation results as a function of poor resources, high student-staff ratios, overcrowded venues are managed. That I know is a challenge because there are fewer places available in universities than to meet the needs of the many young people who wish to attend higher education institutions. And that is why in the government's medium-term policy, there's a commitment to increasing the current levels of enrollment from 17% to 20%. That will need to be accompanied by funding so that we can increase the capacity in a planned way. The South African Research Chairs Initiative, it's a very exciting initiative that was led by your previous ministry. It's still in place, and I'm going to find out where we are in terms of the 2010 target and have a conversation with that on you. The last set of questions, I hope I haven't left anything. Oh, Cheryl's as well. Sorry, remember that more as well. I want to address the question of University of Zululand. This is, I think, what needs to be understood, is that one of the reasons that University of Zululand has been so unstable is because they weren't able to complete the SRC elections because of the contestation between student groups. And, you know, our university should be places where people are beginning to learn democratic practice and beginning to learn how to respect and lead each other. If we can't conclude an SRC election because of contestation, it doesn't augur well for our country and for the region. So, to my knowledge, UZ still doesn't have a democratically elected SRC, which means who does management talk to and who leads the students, which means again, contestation who can mobilize the biggest crowd, whereas in fact what we need to learn on campuses is that students elect a particular grouping, wins the election, and then they represent all, fairly and without favor, as is the same with government. So I think that there's several members here who I know are familiar with University of Zululand, and we need to provide the leadership of adults to encourage students to understand that where we fail to resolve those tensions of democracy, we actually undermine institutions profoundly. So the perception that the South African Union of Students may be biased, I think, comes from the possibility that because there's no SRC, they're not participating in SOWs. The South African Union of Students coordinates SRCs, whatever the organizational base on which those SRCs stood. So it will be SRCs from all over the country, and it would never represent one grouping. But if the University of Zululand doesn't have an SRC, it's not directly represented, and we need to resolve those issues there. Member Doug Moore, yeah, what makes, it's a very interesting question, what makes some campuses more vulnerable to students that are not legitimate students being on campus? And I would say that fundamentally it's to do with effective management, and effective management that has the support of the student population, which means that you have functioning student representative structures and good relationships with the community. If a particular campus, for example, Sashen Gure, as the members described, has many people that are not students on that campus. I would argue that that campus principal, together with the vice chancellor of the university, needs to be working much more closely with the community to reach an agreement on how closely that campus needs to be have access control. But it undermines teaching and learning profoundly, and I'm concerned about that. So there's a follow-up. There's a last question. Oh, you asked how the matric results affect us. Well, it is interesting because as soon as the results are ready, I was very anxious to get them because these are the ways in which they affect us. There's the question of the pass rate. And the pass rate, as members will be aware, is expressed in three categories these days, whether you qualify for admission to a bachelor's degree, qualify for admission for a certificate, qualify admission for a diploma. And if I'm frank, my first anxiety as I look at that is to see if there's many more students that have qualified for admission to degree, because then I know that if, for example, as was the unfortunate error, there's a huge increase, and I know our institutions are going to be under huge pressure. So the number of students who qualify for admission to a degree, diploma, will determine the number of applicants who apply and the pressure. I hope that makes sense. But there's a second way in which they affect us. That is the quality of the passes themselves. And it may be, I think this committee's got a great deal of work to do, but it may be that you want to study the categories of passes across, because students can qualify for admission to a degree and they may have a level of performance across the subjects which is not of a sufficiently high standard to really sustain a good base for higher education, which then puts greater burdens on the institutions in terms of teaching and learning. And universities are research institutions, but they also are institutions of teaching. And it would mean that academics have then the serious responsibility of making sure that their teaching practices are rigorous. In fact, that they research their teaching practices in order to do better. Student housing, we can give a report on that, but there's already work underway in terms of beginning to get a sector understanding of the student housing challenges. The question of innovative funding, as I indicated in the service level agreement for the CETAs for this year, we've already requested them to report in their, well, to write into their service level agreements and chairperson. We're hoping that this committee will invite the CETAs to come and, well, invite the department and the CETAs to come and make presentations on their service level agreements. And we were also hoping that you would work in partnership with the appropriate sectoral portfolio committees. So, for example, the AgriCETA to work with agriculture, MERCETA, for example, to work with DTI. We have asked them to write in specifically where they're going to be forming partnerships with universities, but in particular universities of technology and colleges. So, for example, the funding of some of the end courses, we would be expecting that to be funded through the CETAs from the skills levy and directed towards the colleges. Chairperson, I hope I covered everything briefly enough.
I'm just going to open
I asked a question and I didn't hear the DG answering it. Can I repeat it? My first question, it was just one question anyway. My question was, what has been done to address challenges that led to the abrasions of these said institutions so that they don't resurface? And may I also ask whether the NSFAS has now been restructured in such a way that it covers all the fees per a beneficiary, because in the past it was not the case. Thank you.
Shall we just take just a few, because it's additional to what he was asking. There were a couple of hands, and then so that we close on the input, DJ, and then I would
I'll just summarize in terms of the way forward. Let me just note, hence, please, I'm just going to ask you to just make quick comments or questions that we close. Honorable Mangene, you wanted to speak. Honorable Fukusa. Oh, those are the two ones, and then I'll come just.
It's on colleges. The slide has no number, but it's the heading is proposed expansion of student enrollment in the public FET colleges. I think this is really a wonderful endeavor. I see in 3 years between 2007 and 2009, there was a five-fold increase in the enrollment at the colleges. I wouldn't expect you to have a 2010 enrollment figures yet, but if the trend holds, then probably that figure that is there should be reached, and therefore the others will follow. But what I wanted to check was what amount of work is being done to improve the prestige of the colleges so that they aren't a fallback position. People kids will be in grade 11 and 12 saying, I am finishing grade 12 next year in order to go to a college, an FET college, and do this. Presently, that is not the position. Is there a system-wide work or campaign that is being done to improve their prestige, and so that they become mainstream and places of choice for kids? Also, how are they being connected to the world of work, companies in particular, and so on, so that they have a direct link with the colleges, and perhaps even offer support, financial and otherwise. And in the majority of cases, those who go to these colleges are much more functional and employable than people who go to universities. Incidentally, when I was deputy minister, I visited a college in Port Elizabeth of learners with difficulties in academic learning, and they were doing carpentry and motor mechanic and similar things. Employers were generally queuing to snap them up as soon as they qualify, and they were working as they were still studying. So it's a very important area of work that has been neglected in our country for a very long time, to at great cost mm-hmm. to the economy and to many of our young people.
Your Honourable Fukus.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief. I promise you. DJ, both of these are not in the presentation, but maybe just taking advantage of the opportunity. One is that I'm sure your own integration processes, the higher education and training, is going well, and that by the time you take over officially, then you. So in other words, I'm just saying, I'm hoping that you're progressing well towards that. DJ. Last week, there was a coverage about the University of Stellenbosch and language, and probably you would just speed us up in terms of what that is, what that means, where that is. Thanks.
I think that's quite important. I actually wanted to come and cover it because we did a visit to you then, personally. It would be interesting to see where the issue is. But I think what has been raised, DJ, I think would need some time to spend as a committee. I think I'd recommend as well to Honorable Fransman on the college sector. Just to get a sense in terms, I've heard the minister speak, but just to get a sense in terms of where we are, where we want to see, where we want to go. I happened to be in Russia and France in January, and part of the visit I visited schools of technology, and it's interesting because it's their college sector and what is able to do and produce. I mean, to the extent of even children at a primary level being in a technology school, a type of a college, being able to produce what they produce. Fortunately, these are the specs that are produced by a high school student in Russia, who is learning already optimist, who could do testing, who could do produce. And that's what you would want to start engaging and see South Africa moving. And I'm adding to that point to say we need to respond to the challenges of the economy and be able to move a number of young people who at times, I mean, when you look at the issue of the college, the FETs now, I know DC in the FETs I've interacted with, the students are battling with the NCV because the level and where they've pitched it, it needs a person who has passed the matric. And hence you get learners who are coming from school who couldn't cope with the learning at high school, therefore opted to go to these colleges. But then they are still stuck with what they couldn't cope with and end up with a lot of dropouts at NCV level. That is part of the challenge that we have. And I'm sort of saying that perhaps we need to deal with intensively, look at what we want to achieve out of this college, just deal in detail as part of the discussion, and so that we can input into it. Because I don't think where we are sitting would be able to respond to the needs of the market, would be able to respond to what the economy demands at the level of FETs. They have the resources, the teaching and all that they could, but just to get it to that, so that even when learners or young people, because the other issues around the stigma of these colleges, we've got to turn them around, because people think that when you go to FETs or to college sector, it's because you are dumb. I mean, the minister said that as well. In townships, when you say I'm going to college, it has that connotation that you do not have the ability to be in university. And some of the young ones would everybody say want to go to university. So we've got to increase that level. Even when we talk around that, and at least we've got to be trying to constantly popularize the issue of the college. But lastly, DG, is the issue again of NSFAS driving the awareness of its existence in our communities. Last year we raised an issue again with NSFAS because they gave us to say their target is to reach about 3 schools in rural areas. And we're saying, but what is the impact of that? And these are the outcomes, because if learners know that I can apply for tests, they would definitely, those who apply in September, would immediately apply for it. But I can tell you majority of the students who know that they need to apply in September, they don't apply for financial aid because most of them don't even know what is available. So we've got to try and get NSFAS to the level that it's out there, somehow have a vigorous public awareness campaign that they've got to give themselves that target, increasingly to be aware. As they do this roadshow, either through media, either through print, or whatever that is there. Because if they communicate to students who are already in tertiary, those who are still in high school at a level, lower level, they don't know about it. So those are the targets that we need to get. That is the target that we need to get exposing NSFAS to. There are a number of them who don't know that there's anything called NSFAS. And therefore, we'll have to deal with the challenge of the resources that are required not having enough. But at least you would know that the message has gone out clearly to everybody that needs to have. And then the last one, DT, is I think even in colleges we need to do a monitoring of this bursary scheme implementation. To what extent do learners at FET colleges know that I can have access to my fees, my accommodation, my books being paid for? Because we'll continue. Later this year, we'll come back to annual reports and see underfunding. You know, these are the things that contribute towards that. And
we've got to try at this level, at this point, try and address boosting so that we don't end up with departments or administrators or whoever underspending in certain categories when we have a majority of students needing the funding. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I can start by saying I think that I'm glad that you all had a wonderful holiday, because if I just keep in my mind all of the things that this committee is going to be working on, I understand that you're going to be looking at the CETA SLAs and interrogating those quite rigorously, and that's a whole new learning area for you. The department is busy finalizing its strategic plan to accompany other budgets, and I'm looking forward to engaging you on that, because so many of the issues that you raise you'll be looking for in that. Then there's the NSFAS report, which is a huge process. And then you've asked, and I want to support you, about the FET colleges in particular. I want to come back to that. But if I just look at NSFAS and remember and apologize to Member Nkantshane that I didn't answer the question about central admissions, but I want to put it on the table now because it's quite critical. This is an idea that's been on the table in the higher education sector for several years. I think it may even have started when Minister Ashmal was Minister of Higher Education. It's still on the table, but there's a pilot project in KwaZulu-Natal where instead of applying at three different universities, you apply in one central office, pay one application fee, and then that gets channeled to universities in the region. We think that there's a great deal of advantage in that model, but the reserve of the universities is the anxiety of a dependence on an external system, and if there's a problem with the system, the chaos that would cause, because we already know the tight time frames. But one of the questions that's going to arise is that when you say learners need to know more about NSFAS, is the mechanism that NSFAS uses at the moment is there's an allocation to an institution, so the institution is able to match students that are accepted with financial needs, so they allocate the students that are accepted, and that's quite a complex set of arrangements to manage in the time frames that we have. If I can just talk quickly to the fact that we will be tabling the strategic plan, I'm anxious to get your time frames so that we're ready in time. But you may have noticed in relation to the question about the process of establishing the new department that a week or two ago we advertised for DDGs. So that will be a great day for me personally. When we have new leadership in terms of the Director General in the Department for Higher Education, for Technical Vocational Education and Training, for the skills and for admin. And I'm hoping that the engagement that we have about the strategic plan will overlap with new people coming in so that you can talk to new people themselves. But if we look at the FET sector, as Chairperson has indicated, I would say that there are probably four key things that stand out for me. One is the role of the committee in looking very carefully at how we're managing the administrative transition, the legal transition, the administrative transition. There's going to be change in legislation that you're going to have to be dealing with. There's constitutional amendments that you're going to have to be dealing with. The second thing that is absolutely urgent and pressing is the question that several members have raised, which is about alignment of the colleges to the real needs in our country, both in direct employment and in the development of our country. That means alignment, as Member Mangena has indicated, with those scarce skill areas at that level of technologist in the occupational areas, making sure that we have the artisans, making sure that the certificates and diplomas in the appropriate occupations that are needed are developed in a way that industry has confidence in them, that employers have confidence in them, that workers have confidence in them. And, Chairperson, there's lots that we could talk about here, but maybe that will come out in the strategic plan. There's some wonderful new projects. The third thing is with the alignment, to really address issues of improving the quality of teaching and learning, and we can report on that. And the fourth one is several people have picked up, several members have picked up, is managing these complex realignments, both in terms of governance and legally, as well as with the needs of industry and commerce, is with the growth of the sector. We have to expand. We have 50 colleges with over 200 sites. But we know that these colleges are going to be important vehicles for social development, for example, in rural areas. They need to be linked to the rural development strategy. We need to be providing the kinds of various entrepreneurial, agriculture extension officer work. So the growth is complex. Now, to come to the specific questions, what have we done to ensure that the registration problems are dealt with? We've gone in, we facilitated conversations between students and management so that resolutions have been achieved, usually in written form. One can then hope that the relationships are sufficiently intact that people can then carry on resolving any tensions that might arise directly within the institution, which is the proper place for them to be resolved. If the relationships are sufficiently intact, that people can then carry on resolving any tensions that might arise directly within the institution, which is the proper place for them to be resolved. If there's any